Welcome back to another edition of Animation Deliberation, the podcast where we take action animation and cartoons seriously, but not too seriously. On this episode, myself, Zuhair Ali, and guest host Nate Muzzy continue our coverage of Amazon's Invincible. We're doing episode 6, You Look Kinda Dead, so stay tuned for that right after these ads. Sing along if you know the words. A 1, 2, 3, it's time for animation deliberation. A conversation and a celebration of our favorite action animated series. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, welcome back to another exciting episode of Animation Deliberation. I'm your host, J. Scotty St. Clair, and I am joined by the awesome and stellar Zuhair Ali and the incomparable Nate Muzzy. How's it going, fellas?
Oh, I'm blushing.
Incomparable. That's pretty high praise. I'll take it.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think any of us can claim to be invincible, but I'll give praise where I can.
If we do claim to be invincible, then they freeze and show the title screen, so we better not.
Did that happen this episode? I think this was the first episode we didn't get that
it gag. Did, but there wasn't any dialogue towards them. It was like side characters that led up to it.
Oh, okay.
I just remember I was like, oh, it wasn't like main characters doing it this time. I think it was the people like in the college town on the cold open before like introducing our main characters that like said something along that line and like Invincible popped up. And I always forget that that's a thing until it happens. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like stunned for a quick second. I'm just like, well done.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always such a nice little nod. And it continually gets bloodier and bloodier.
Yeah, I wasn't sure, like, if I was going to like it, like, in the long run. But it's definitely grown on me, so I'll take it.
Nice.
At what point did you start questioning it?
Like, episode 2, I was like, oh, they're okay. Going to do this every time. And, mm-hmm. And I was like, I wonder if that'll get old. And, like... Episode 3, I was like, yeah, maybe it's getting old, and now like I'm back to liking it, like in the first episode. So
nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, before we dive too terribly deep into this next great installment in Invincible, Zuhair, you had another 5-star review that came through for us. Did you want to go ahead and tackle that?
Let's do it. I appreciate all the review guys. Whether it's good or bad, just go over to iTunes and give us your feedback. But this one is from Influenza. Mm. And they say, this is a great new podcast from the folks at the Stranded Panda Podcast Network. Jay Scotty and Zuhair are awesome hosts, and they have a good amount of background knowledge and appreciation of the material to cover the geeky animated shows that I love. The first two shows that they're covering, Young Justice and Invincible, are both great series too, so I am fully enjoying rewatching Young Justice Season 1 and 2 along with them. Looking forward to what comes next. I really love how they came into Invincible without much knowledge of the comic, because it provides a fresh perspective. I know a lot about that series, and sometimes my base knowledge can get in the way of enjoying it. Listening to these episodes after the fact gives me added appreciation to the show. Thank you, Influenza.
Awesome. I like it. Yeah, we appreciate that feedback, and as Zuhair said, if anybody else out there listening wants to leave us a review, just find us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. We should be on all the major platforms now, and if you want to submit any feedback, I'll be addressing some feedback that we got at the end of the episode, but you can always send that to animationdeliberationpodcast@gmail.com. And with that out of the way, let's go ahead and get right into this episode. So overall impressions... we will give a overall spoiler warning, as we have with all these other episodes. If you have not watched the episode, go watch it and tune back in later. What are your guys' overall impressions?
I thought it was kind of a nice change of pace episode. I know that might be a criticism for some people, but it was like the whole show was moving very fast. You know, we went from Mark not being able to fly to last episode, you know, he's fighting Battle Beast. And, like, mm-hmm. this episode was, like, it slowed things down. We got to see, you know, we haven't seen William since, like, the first episode. And it's, like, is that character even in the show? And we got some character stuff between Mark and his best friend and some stuff between Mark and Amber. So I thought it was a great episode. It wasn't the same pace as the others, but that's kind of nice every now and then.
Yeah, yeah. I could definitely agree with those points. In terms of pacing, I thought it felt a little more similar to the first episode. Outside of Mark spending so much time with his dad, I felt like that was almost kind of replaced with the time he was spending with Amber and or William, like you mentioned. Zuhair, what do you think?
It's interesting that I called the last episode a filler episode, but this one did kind of have that slow pace, and I think the show just doesn't really have filler episodes, and for 8 episodes, it really shouldn't. But I did like the pacing of this one, and I will always appreciate a show where when the hero gets beat up really badly and has certain injuries, it actually affects their next fight.
Mm-hmm.
I think growing up with things like Dragon Ball Z and their instant healing all the time, like, it kind of took away from the factor of, like, I actually do have broken ribs right now. I actually do have PTSD right now. I do have this, I do have that. So my next fight's not going to be as good, or it's a factor of how I move or how quickly I react. And this episode kind of did that. I don't think PTSD really hit him too hard because he was trying to protect his friends, but you could tell he was a little slower, like, with his motions and movements because he just got out of the hospital. And for a human, he actually did look like he got hit by a truck, which is the dialogue that came in from the show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I do appreciate that was a huge factor on, like, I actually can't perform at my peak right now because this, like, my body just hurts right now. And I wasn't prepared to be in hero mode. I thought I was going to be on a break. I also really like Eve's storyline of kind of leaving her family and going off to do her own thing because, like we mentioned last week, the toxicity of their parent or her parents controlling her every move and everything just to make her be like, all right, I'm out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really nice to see her flourish in that regard. But, I agree with all the points you guys brought up. I thought it was another excellent entry. You're kind of right in the fact that there aren't filler episodes, and they're not necessarily bottle episodes either, but they are these self-contained kind of like adventures and escapades. But we always get these plants or like little hints as to what's going on with the greater scheme, especially involving characters like Omni-Man. And with that in mind, we were kind of breaking up what exactly storylines took place in this particular episode. And for the most part, it really is, the episode's called You Look Kind of Dead, and that's really appropriate. I always appreciate clever titles like that. And not only is that appropriate because we pick up with Invincible, basically, we get to see his, like, intestines, like, out on the operating table, and all the Guardians are in such a poor state, and it's really, like, the gore there was super effective. But then not only that, you get these RoboCop villains that are basically these college students that have been deformed, and they're pretty grotesque as well. I mean, we get that opening scene with the douchey trust fund kid, Doug Cheston, who's voiced hilariously by Justin Roiland.
Yeah. Yeah, they had a couple of guests on this. Because, like, Ezra Miller played Sinclair on this, too.
Correct, yeah. D.A. Sinclair. Pretty creepy performance there. I'll try not to take umbrage with the fact that they kind of co-opted my last name and bastardized it a bit for such a creepy guy. but yeah, I thought Ezra did a great job. And then, who is the gentleman that voices William? Because it was nice to spend a little more time with him. Bear with me just a moment here.
Andrew Rannells.
Yes, yeah. What do you guys think of his performance? Just out of curiosity.
I think it fits what they're going for, especially when he finally finds out that his best friend's a superhero. Like, that overexcited, geeky response was just very fitting for, I guess, what we expect of the best friend that finds out.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it was interesting to see, like, you know, the first, I don't know, half of the episode or whatever, he spends most of his time being this thirsty high school boy. and then the second half is mostly spent, like, amazed that his best friend turned out to be a superhero.
Right.
But, like, I thought it was nice just to get to spend some more time with the character. I hope we get more out of that character, which I kind of think they're setting up in this, because it seems like Amber and Mark are done for now. We might get some Mark leaning on his best friend because his girlfriend's no longer there.
Okay. Yeah, I would like to see that explored. I did love that moment when they first embarked on the road trip where he was describing his crush Rick, and it's like he and Amber were talking about, like, they call it, like, what, like a thick like a horse's mane.
Yeah,
Mark's like, that's a good thing, and they're both like, good? Yeah. And it's just little moments like that that help to endear you to the characters, like especially the character of Amber. It would be easy to make a character like that unlikable, but you really do feel for her, and she's justified in her offense. And when she sheds those tears, like you really feel for her. And they actually do a great job of, like, Mark is a lot of times, even though he's the title character, he's not necessarily my favorite character on screen. Zuhair, you were mentioning Adam Eve, like she quickly became one of my favorite characters this episode. They just made her so altruistic. Her treehouse is badass. She had the best day out of any of the other characters. She got to go home and just, like, rest her head and have a peaceful sleep, which was so nice to see given the hell that she was put through by her parents.
Yeah.
And Rex, we didn't get to see him this episode, but he's a real tool.
Yeah. It was, and we got to see just how powerful she is.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, kind of making force fields and shooting little blasts is like an underuse of her powers, and I think this is her realizing that. So that was, like, really cool to see. And a little bit too, that possibly the reason the episode spends so much time developing William is because maybe we're not going to see as much of Eve in the coming episodes, you know, because Mark's support system is kind of gone now. You know, his dad hasn't been there for him.
Right.
His mom is dealing with his dad's bullshit. And, you know, Amber has dumped him. And Eve is gone. So, you know, we might find Mark a little bit alone next episode.
Yeah, I could see him kind of being in some dire straits there.
I want to dial back to Eve real quick. First off, sure. I want to second what you said about the treehouse. That is a awesome view. I wasn't expecting her to actually make a treehouse. I thought she was just going to set up camp. But like Muzzy said, what she does with her powers really isn't like the full extent of it. And I think that's why my imagination didn't quite go that far, because making the door in the house was like, well, that's trippy. But then actually, like, manipulating the tree to actually make, like, a perfect home for her, I was like, that's genius. And then she can just fly to wherever she needs to go. But whenever we cover a storyline, whatever universe it may be in, I feel like whenever a hero says, like, we need to take our powers elsewhere because we don't want to be part of this team anymore, like, they become grand scale heroes to, like, street heroes, and they're kind of doing the same thing on a smaller scale. But she's actually, like, helping communities that we wouldn't quite really think about because all of these action sequences happen in big cities. But she's out in farms, like, helping to harvest and making things grow and really helping the lives of people that we really don't see from that perspective. And for her to use her powers in such a unique way, I don't think, I mean, forgive me if I'm mistaking something from like Marvel or DC or any other hero franchise, but that's quite creative. And I like that she took that route of actually understanding, like, I don't need to be kicking people's asses to be useful. Like, I'm very helpful in a very wide array of opportunities.
Yeah, yeah. I can't think of any characters off the top of my head that have done such, you know, straight up like activism and volunteer work. Yeah, I think the only thing that's like briefly coming to mind now is I know Green Arrow and Green Lantern kind of had a run, I want to say maybe in like the 80s, that was supposed to have a little bit more of a like activism bent to it, but I can't speak to that too much to dive too deep into it. But no, yeah, Adam Eve, like I said, she's great, quickly becoming one of my favorite characters. And that was one thing I had to learn here. Her name is pronounced Gillian Jacobs, which is kind of unusual, but definitely unique. Does an excellent job showcasing the full range of emotion and the especially in the scenes with her family. The frustration that's there, and even with Mark, that scene, it was almost kind of awkward in a way. Like it felt like she had something she wanted to say to him, but he almost just kind of like immediately cut her off and started talking about his things. And then when she found out about the trip, she noted surprise, and there was obviously a little bit of disappointment there, but she doesn't really interfere. She lets him do his thing, and she just kind of gives the old Irish goodbye and flies right out the window. But
it's funny that she pretty much plays the same role that she does in Community, but we're just taking the sitcom filter off of her now.
The Brita filter?
Yeah.
But
thank you very much. I'm here till Thursday. Try the veal. Anyway, let's kind of circle back to the Guardians. So like, in addition to Invincible being in a pretty pitiful state at the opening of this episode, the Guardians are as well. So Black Samson had a pretty interesting scene in the hospital there where they're defibrillating him, and then suddenly, you know, he emits a burst of energy himself, and he seems to have his powers back. He heals pretty quickly and has some nice exchanges with Robot. I couldn't help but laugh out loud when Robot is like saying that he'll stay there to continue to observe Monster Girl, even though Black Samson's good. He's like, go back to the team and report there. I'm going to stay here and continue to observe her. And he's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, you will.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that character, because he was definitely vying for leadership, and the thing that they kept throwing back into his face is that he's an old man without power. So hopefully we get to spend more time with him now that he seems to be fully recovered.
I did like Robot's dialogue in the beginning too, regarding when the medical staff was trying to kick him out, and like, I have all the knowledge about this person, so we can either waste time or we can work together. And then he just started taking charge and actually coming up with the solutions needed to save Monster Girl. But it's funny how he speaks with such eloquence, even in such traumatic situations. I mean, I get that he's a robot, but it's like, how do you not comply to what he says with a tone like that?
Yeah.
His kind of obsession with Monster Girl, I'm not sure if it's endearing or getting creepy.
It is getting a little on the creepy side, especially because it seemed like she, correct me if I'm wrong here, but to me it looked like she visibly got notably younger, because we had that scene when they were trying to, you know, put the breathing tube down her throat, and then she transforms into the monster. And I kind of got Sam Raimi Spider-Man 2 vibes, where you get kind of the horror hospital scene and you realize how terrifying this would be for just a regular surgeon to be put in this predicament. But the other thing I will say about that whole robot Monster Girl storyline is the reveal of Robot using drones was super effective for me, because we saw that Robot was battle damage from the skirmish earlier on, and then the next time we kind of see him is when he's completely beat to hell and frozen and holding that flower, and then it just kind of crumples. And then the brand's shiny new one kind of steps out, and I was like, oh, that was super effective. I thought Robot was going to be out of it for a second.
Yeah, I freaked out. Like, what the hell did you just go through? Like,
yeah.
Did you go through an avalanche to get that flower? What's happened? And then just casually walks in. I was like, oh.
Well, he said it was well protected.
Yeah?
Yeah. I wonder if we're going to get to see that place eventually.
Ooh. That'd be cool.
Just because, like, that's kind of a neat seed to plant that there's something there that's well guarded, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe that has something to do with the origin of her powers. Because we really haven't gotten much of anything in that way, have we?
Yeah, he just says she's cursed.
Okay. Yeah, he does say that. Yeah, you're right. And then what about some of the other heroes? I mean, obviously, Nolan is a Viltrumite, as well with Mark being half Viltrumite. And a lot of these other ones seem to be, you know, born out of, like, robotics and science, and we see that there are other dimensions, but I felt like we got some dialogue from Rex, and again, he wasn't in this episode, but I can't help bring him up. He made it sound like he was robbed of, like, a high school experience, I should say, perhaps because he was experimented on or something to that effect, but I don't know if we've gotten anything definitive as far as any of that goes.
No, I don't think we've gotten origins for most of them.
Okay. It'll be, I mean, I know the season should be coming to a close pretty quickly here. This was episode 6, and like I said, everything I'm seeing, it should be 8 episodes. So next episode should be the penultimate episode, and then we should be, you know, coming to a close here. But I'll save my predictions until, you know, a little later on the cast, and we've covered this episode and given it proper justice, I should say. I will say, going back to just some of the hospital scenes we got, so with that conversation with Cecil and Omni-Man, where basically Omni-Man is questioning Cecil about Darkblood being the primary suspect for killing the Guardians of the Globe, I thought that was, again, super effective. The undertones there, that basically they were basically having it out without really having it out. Like, Nolan was basically asking him, if you think I killed them, why would I do it? Did you guys get that, or am I off base there?
What
do
you think?
Okay.
The impression I got is Nolan was, like, feeling him out to see if they were going to try pin it on him.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, Cecil, like, was essentially saying, yeah, we're just going to drag this thing with Darkblood out. You know, they're both kind of lying to each other, but, like, saying what they want to say at the same time.
Yeah, yeah, because Nolan had that one line of dialogue. I think Cecil said something along the lines, like, why would he do it? And Nolan just kind of, like, because he's a demon. And I was just like, oh, are you kind of, is that self-acknowledgement there? Or, but I think we obviously know that there's some sinister undertones to his character anyway.
And Darkblood does have a past of solving the most difficult cases as well. So it's like, oh, because he's a demon, it's kind of a lame excuse if he's kind of the go-to guy for these situations.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
I'm wondering if, I know there's been quite a few heroes like Superman who, like, listen to your heartbeat to see if you're lying or not. So I'm wondering if like, Omni-Man has done that to Cecil, or if Cecil's been in Omni-Man's presence so long that he's, like, gotten better at controlling his breathing in, like, intense situations like that. I don't know if, like, any of that is a factor, but it would be cool if that was addressed in these little verbal skirmishes.
It would be cool if it was addressed. It hasn't been addressed yet, but, I mean, we have to believe that he's capable of that kind of thing, because we did get that scene with Debbie, and the return of Art the Tailor, voiced by the legendary Mark Hamill, and that was just, like, Nolan becomes increasingly terrifying in this episode. So I was so scared, not only for Debbie in that moment, but Art as well. And he even says it, like, who am I going to tell? I'm absolutely terrified here. And then the exchange between Nolan and Art, where they're drinking those beers, I felt kind of echoed that scene that I mentioned with Cecil and Omni-Man, where he's basically saying what he wants to say without saying it, you know.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting because Nolan basically spent the episode figuring out who knows, you know, does Cecil know, does the Taylor know, does Debbie know?
Right.
And, like, making sure those three aren't going to talk or reveal anything.
Yeah.
And I guess my question is, other than Cecil, like, what are they going to do if this does, what, you know, if they pin it on him, what happens? He's still Omni-Man. Like,
right. Yeah.
Although he is not omnipotent.
Sure.
Like, presumably, if all the heroes, like, not just the Guardians, but every power person we saw, like, you could defeat him. Because the Guardians did some real damage to him.
Which I appreciate.
Definitely.
I don't like... I mean, despite the show being named Invincible, I don't like invincible superheroes at all.
Yeah. Although, I guess when they were experimenting on Mark's blood, there's a hint that, like, you can damage him, but he's just going to keep coming back.
Hmm. Yeah. There was, yeah, because we talked about it on that coverage, but what was it? Chemicals, diseases, they pretty much tried everything, and it was just resilient to pretty much any approach there.
And I guess kind of spoilers for season two of The Boys, but there have been a couple of scenes and a bit of dialogue where it's like, yeah, Homelander is, like, the face of the United States, but if it comes to the point where they know what he's about and the people are against him, then, like, what's his purpose at that point? So if Omni-Man's purpose is to be the protector of Earth and Earth doesn't see him that way, what would be his motive to stay at that point? Like, is he going to rule it? Would he just go back to another planet that doesn't know who his species is yet and try to protect that instead? Like, I think the public image is a bigger factor than we're giving it credit for.
Yeah, I mean,
I agree.
Which might be why, you know, Cecil is playing things so close to his vest. He understands that not only the public image, but just the sheer and utter fallout that could come with that reveal, not only what Nolan would do, but how it might affect the populace, because we've already talked about how complacent and dependent the people and even the police force seems to be in this world. And I think that even, you know, speaks to the college campus, the fact that a guy like D.A. Sinclair is even able to, like, set up a lab where he's able to abduct his fellow students and turn them into android robocops. And it's like, you would think if people are going missing, they would, and there was a pattern established, it wouldn't take that long for some competent investigators to figure out what's going on, but he's basically doing it under their nose.
It wasn't like they got to campus and there were, like, flyers or, you know, like, news going on about, you know, all these missing students.
There were
a couple.
Oh, was there?
Yeah, there was points where, like, when they first reached the campus and they were all talking in front of a wall, you're right. there was a billboard in the back that had missing in their faces on it, and a couple of, like, club promos.
Right. And then later on in the episode, you start to see Doug Cheston's photo featured pretty prominently there.
Yeah, I noticed the Doug Cheston stuff, but yeah, I totally missed the flyers earlier. But yeah, like,
you want to see my big trust fund?
Yeah, Justin, I know we mentioned Justin Roiland doing the voice already, but
yeah,
he kind of knocked that douchey, that douchey frat boy spirit of that character right out of the park.
Oh, totally.
I think I've mentioned before, like, I don't really keep up with the voice actors too much, but now I've just been consuming so much content that sometimes I catch it, and I text Jay Scott, and I was like, this sounds like Rick from Rick and Morty, and then went and looked it up, and I was like, yep, that's exactly who it is.
Yeah, you had a good ear on this one, because I have to admit, I did not recognize Ezra Miller initially. I knew that he was in the show, and normally the great feature about Amazon is that they have that, is it called the X-Ray? Where basically you can, at any point in the episode, even as it's going on, you can bring up the voice cast and it'll show you exactly who they're voicing. But for whatever reason, I just didn't happen to check in this episode. But on a rewatch, it's so obvious. It's him.
So I checked that for Rick, and it was when I was checking that I saw Ezra. Otherwise, I don't think I would have guessed Ezra either, because despite watching the Snyder Cut again yesterday, because I was on bed rest and I had nothing else to do, he does such a good job at making the voice so unique for that character that I honestly didn't see the resemblance between him playing Sinclair and playing Barry Allen.
I didn't catch Ezra either. I only caught Ezra when my buddy was like, "Oh, Justin Roiland was in this episode." And I was like, "Oh, that's who that guy was." And then I went and checked to see if anyone else was in there, and I was like, "Holy cow, that was Ezra Miller?" the voice cast for this show is star-studded.
Oh, it's phenomenal. Yeah. Kirkman must have curried a lot of favors in Hollywood, but his stuff is pretty stellar, so I can see why people want to work with him. But one other thing I wanted to bring up is, and maybe it was present in past episodes and I just didn't pick up on it quite as much, but I felt that this particular episode had a much more cinematic feel in terms of some of the animations and the transitions. There was one shot in particular where, speaking about Ezra Miller's character, D.A. Sinclair, he steps out from the shadows into the light, and just the way the light moves across his face and the shadows remain underneath his, his brow as well as his cheekbones was just super effective and gave him a very skeletal and creepy appearance. And then the other one that I noticed was when Rick brought back the beers to the apartment and he goes to crack one open, they do a really nice transition from that beer to Nolan having the beers with Art on the rooftop.
Yeah. I'm definitely not as sensitive to animation maybe as you are. I tend to not know, in broad strokes, I can see, this was animated well, and or this was the bad, terrible animation cartoons had when I was a kid. But I feel overall this show has been just kind of a treat to look at, it benefits from being animated. You could never make this show any other way, millions of dollars per episode.
Well, what's interesting, what I've learned after the fact is, and I think I might recall having heard it in the news cycle, but I guess at the time that this animated adaptation was first announced, they announced a live-action adaptation movie as well, and apparently that is still supposed to happen. I don't know at what point in pre-production they're even in.
I don't even know if I want to see that now.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, the joy of this series is all the small character work that just...
Oh, yeah.
It's, not to get away from animation, but it's kind of Falcon and the Winter Soldier, I don't think it would be nearly as good as a movie.
Oh,
because you get to dwell and spend time with characters and get into minutia. Exactly. And that's really what I love about this show. The action animation sequences in this are amazing, and I do enjoy those. But it's not like I'm bored between them.
Right.
The inner character stuff is just great on this show.
And you have so many amazing actors doing the voice work for this. How do you replace Ezra Miller and Simmons and like all these people who like probably for whatever reason couldn't be capable of playing their live action roles. Like,
oh, well, I mean, while we're highlighting the voice actors, I mean, it goes without saying, Steven Yeun has been absolutely killing it. I probably haven't mentioned as much as I should have since the initial episodes, but yeah, he does such a fantastic job of, he's a believable teenager, you know?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Sandra Oh is Debbie, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, there's no bad voice actor on the cast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And like, yeah, and just like the action, like how would you put Battle Beast in a movie and not make it look bad? Like that is such a, you know, it is so much easier to be like, okay, it's animated and like your suspension of disbelief is there and you're set up for something. And like, you know, all of a sudden, like, you're going to have a dude in CGI / some practical makeup, like, and like, how do you create Omni-Man's mustache? They'd have to reverse the technology they used on the original cut of Justice League.
Now this is an animation focused podcast, but while we're talking a little bit about the live action stuff, just out of curiosity, do you guys have anybody in mind other than J.K. Simmons that might be able to bring Omni-Man to life? Because I have a couple in mind.
Off the top of my head, I will throw out John Hamm.
Ooh, I hadn't even considered him. I like that though. That's great. Okay. Zuhair, did you have any?
Josh Brolin for me.
Okay. I like it. I can see that.
I think he could pull off the mustache.
Yeah. I was thinking, even though he recently appeared as a Deathstroke in the Snyder Cut, I was thinking either Joe Manganiello, or Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who has a relationship with Robert Kirkman already appearing on The Walking Dead.
I just call him Big Dick Richie from Magic Mike.
you know, I like either of those. I'm a big D&D nerd, so anything Joe Manganiello does,
oh, right,
I
on
support.
Yeah, yeah.
because he's also a giant D&D nerd. I think there's plenty of actors that could pull it off. You know, but like J.K. Simmons, like, just does such a good job in this series. I think no matter how good the actor is, mm-hmm. if you watch this, it's going to be jarring.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt.
Send us an email with who you think your fan cast could be if any character couldn't fulfill, like, their voice role to live action role.
Just while we're kind of doing it, again, I don't want to get it too far away on this, but Timothée Chalamet for Invincible. Actually, no, I guess he should have that Asian ancestry represented a little bit more. I rescind that. Let's get somebody, a person of color in there. Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I could honestly, I wouldn't be upset if Steven Yeun did it. He's a little old maybe for it.
Yeah.
Because I think he's close to like my age.
Okay.
which is a little old for a high schooler, but
I don't know the dude's name, but I just saw Crazy Rich Asians for the first time last night. I'm way behind, but you remember the dude in Spider-Man Far From Home, the Asian kid that like got older, like he used to be the younger brother?
Oh yeah,
Brad.
Yeah Brad. He would be great.
Yeah, that's perfect.
I
right
like
there
that. Yeah, good call. I like that. There are a couple more things I want to address, chiefly in terms of the action. These grotesque android things were definitely, I'm trying to think of the right way to put this. The action was a little different. Like, it was more claustrophobic in that, like, underground chamber. But then when things finally, you know, turned around and Rick was able to free himself and free the rest of the drones, like, not only did William get to wail on D.A. Sinclair, but Invincible, man, you just get to see how just a single punch from him destroys this guy's jaw. Like, he's going to, that's going to be, take months and months of reconstructive surgery.
Was it a punch or a pimp slap?
that's a good point. Yeah,
I'm pretty sure it was a pimp slap, and it was so satisfying to watch. And like,
dude is
there's so much stuff that made me cringe in this episode. Like the whole thing about like these kids who went to college and like their lives are just eternally screwed up because literally a part of their brain has been removed, and most of their body has been replaced with robots, and they can't like live their lives anymore. Like that, like genuinely pissed me off. And then see him laying on the gurney with his jaw fucked up, and I'm just like, this is, I'm so glad I get to see you like this. As dark as that may be, like, I wish you are suffering a little bit more right now, but this is such a satisfying view of your face just being fucked up, because you can never give back those kids, like, what you took. Like, that whole sequence, like, genuinely angered me.
Yeah.
Very sad.
Not to go back too far, but I just thought I'd pop in and say the actor who played Brad in Far From Home was Remy Hai, and it's H-I-I-I. Hopefully I pronounced that right. But yeah, just wanted to give credit where credit's due.
No, I appreciate that. Yeah. Very good. Let's see here.
He would totally fit that role.
Yeah, yeah, he's excellent. He did a great job in Far From Home. He was a great foil to Peter. So yeah, I could definitely see him embodying that that quiet confidence that a character like Invincible, who is very much an allegory for a Peter Parker type, would definitely work. One other thing I wanted to bring up, and I don't want to be incredibly negative here, but we're talking about the animation and some of the stylizations and whatnot. Have you guys noticed when we have a shot that's like pretty dialogue heavy with two characters, one thing that they do that I like that gives it that cinematic feel is that they're not afraid to just have like unfocused characters kind of like walk in front of the frame to kind of like sell that environmental feel. But the other thing I notice is like if you look in the background, a lot of times the character models that are in the background are these like really low rendered like 3D models. Have you guys noticed that at all?
I did notice that.
I have not noticed
okay.
that.
It actually took me away from the dialogue because I was like, is that a significant person back there? Like, who's walking? Oh no, it's just a random student like sitting in, what is going on? Wait, yeah, what did you just say? Because I was focused on the dude in the back.
I will notice it every single time from now on.
Well,
hopefully,
I hope it doesn't.
Hopefully that's something they can fix season 2. You know,
it's not entirely distracting. It doesn't necessarily look bad. It's just a different style. They're kind of like cell shaded and they're not super detailed. So
there's like, like you might as well just put two dots and a little smiley face drawn off there.
Yeah. I mean, the budget is going a lot of other places. We always get a lot of action. We've talked about the star studded cast and I mean, If that's my biggest complaint, I'm pretty satisfied.
I forget about little things like that by the time we cast because there's just so much good that show does. But literally, the second you said it, the exact scene just popped in my head, and I was like, "Oh yeah, that did happen."
I think we're both talking about the same one where Amber and Mark are on the bench.
Yeah. The dude just walks up in the back. I was like, "Who's that?"
Yeah. Well, anyway, I think we might have talked about it a little bit at the front of the episode, especially when we were talking about Robot, but I guess it's worth mentioning again. We did get, on our post-credit scene, the return of a kind of minor character, John Hamm's, his security guard, Steve, his stepson, who I don't believe we've seen since episode 2, I want to say.
Yes.
When the body parts were kind of raining in Britain, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
But yeah, anyway, he and his buddy are digging up the Immortal, and then that's when we have the Mahler twins show up, and then that's when we get a little payoff for that assurance or that leverage they were referring to. And Apparently, if you drink out of the skull of a mortal, you inherit his powers. At least that's what this kid read on Reddit. And then we get the great Mahler twins PSA. Don't believe everything you read on the internet, kids. Credits.
So do you think they're going to revive or clone the immortal?
Ooh. Cloning seems like a strong possibility because, yeah.
Because, you know, actually out of the original Guardians, Immortal was really the strongest. It's almost like both Omni-Man and Immortal are Superman, like, just at different power levels.
Right. And I guess the vibe that I got from, or maybe I read it on the wiki, I think I did, Immortal, they also classify as a Vandal Savage allegory, even though he's obviously a good guy.
Yeah,
it's just that,
okay,
that prolonged existence like that. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
Mm-hmm. My theory is that, this is kind of far-fetched, is that Robot wants to make Immortal's body and transfer his consciousness over to it.
But I don't think Robot's
Robot
in
didn't
on it.
Have his DNA.
Yeah.
He had Rexplode's DNA.
Right. And it's worth mentioning that we saw that body is progressing along at a...
Wait, so they're growing a Rex blood?
Yep. I believe so. That's the blood sample he provided to them.
At least the only one we've seen him take.
Right. So he doesn't know anything about the immortal. That's the Mahler twins. They mentioned that they wanted assurance for their deal. Hmm. And then the next time and then one of them says grab a shovel, and then the next time we see him is at that burial site. So
the twins have the body of Immortal, but they're growing another Rex in front of Robot? Am I understanding that right?
I believe so.
Well, Robot hires them to grow another Rex body.
Right.
Presumably to transfer his consciousness into.
Yep.
And the Mahler twins are afraid of Robot double-crossing.
Correct.
So they dig up Immortal, presumably to do something with that DNA.
Interesting.
Yeah. I would think it would be interesting if they revive him. Well, actually, I guess it wouldn't matter if they revive him or clone him, because anytime they transfer the consciousness, if his brain, if they're using that same brain, he would have the knowledge of what Omni-Man did. So it wouldn't really matter if he's a clone or revived. He could testify directly against Omni-Man. If he can survive another bout with him.
Yeah, that's the real question is, like, you know, but, like, from what we saw with the original Guardians fight, if you took Mahler twins, Robot, and Immortal,
yeah,
they might be able to at least stop Omni-Man.
Yeah. I agree with
you. I'm probably way off on that, like...
No, I think there's sound evidence for that. He's shown, and like Zuhair mentioned, he's certainly not invincible. Neither one of them are, and maybe that's why we've seen Mark go through such a beating, so that we know Nolan can actually be defeated. And I think it is worth mentioning, just kind of talking about where the series is headed as a whole. I mean, I think it's fairly obvious that there's going to be a confrontation between Mark and Nolan by the end of the season.
Yeah, I think it's going to come out. I'm curious to see where that goes, because Mark is not strong enough to beat his dad.
Oh, no.
Which Nolan continuously reminds him of.
You guys saying that just has me really worried for Debbie.
Mm.
Whether it be physically or emotionally. Like, it's like, ugh.
Yeah, I think we've seen Nolan be emotionally abusive. He doesn't seem willing to hurt her physically, at least not yet.
Yeah.
But he killed the Guardians of the Globe, so who knows? Yeah.
Yeah, it's the big mystery of the season. So But hopefully we will get more answers very soon. As, we've only got a couple episodes left. We'll look forward to covering episode 7 sooner rather than later. Did you guys have any other thoughts or things you had to get off your chest relating to episode 6? You look kind of dead.
I'm just sad there's only two more.
Yeah, I'm going to be super bummed because Falcon and Winter Soldier ends this week.
Yep.
And then the next week it Invincible ends.
Yeah.
And then it's like, I think Bad Batch might be starting up. So maybe I won't have a May 4th Bad Batch starts. So maybe I don't have a break. So
there is no end in sight, my friends. We've got
no rest for the wicked.
That's right. That's right. We got all the content for days and weeks and months. But I wanted to hit some feedback that was submitted to our Gmail account.
Let's hear it.
This is from our listener, Aaron Deming, a.k.a. Sunny Tetris. And he hits us with this. Hey, Jay, Scotty, Zuhair, and guest host Muzzy. Since you mentioned me in your first Invincible episode, thanks for doing that, by the way, so cool, I figured I would write in to say that you guys are awesome and I love your podcast. I have to rewatch the Young Justice episodes again, so I've only listened to your first episode of that. The context of the comment was that people like me, who have a pretty deepish knowledge of the source material, would have been frustrated by the speculation. Trust me, I love that you guys have little to no background knowledge. Shows that are super faithful adaptations of the comics like Invincible and The Walking Dead tend to bore me after a while. I can usually pick up on clues for what's going to happen and then lose the total lack of surprise that the show is expecting. So far, Invincible hasn't been that bad, thankfully. While I have read most of the comics, I think I'm only like 4 volumes away from the end. It has been a few years. I intentionally didn't reread them before the show because I wanted my memory not to be recent. That being said, I do remember the major story elements and that have appeared in the show so far. Listening to your discussions and speculations is so rewarding to me. I get to hear what you think might happen and dig in on the parts that my mind might have glossed over because it was too familiar. The same thing happens when I discuss with my best friend Jesse, who recently joined the Stranded Panda Trivia under the name Citizen D-Bag.
Nice.
Yeah, right? I recognize that name. I have to work so hard not to shout out spoilers when he speculates or ask him in advance when he's okay with a spoiler. Listening to you guys is so much fun. Oh, excuse me. Listening to you guys is so much safer. Although, if you do ever want my input on things, you know where to find me. Thank you, Aaron Deming, a.k.a. Sunny Tetris. So, thank you, Aaron. We appreciate that. I will say, my limited understanding of the comics, and full transparency, I've been enjoying this show so much that I couldn't help, but I have listened to like some YouTube videos and stuff like that that kind of talk about the show and its relationship to the comics and stuff like that. So I obviously don't have a full knowledge or anything like that, but I have been able to get a little bit more context. And it seems like the show really is doing its own thing in a lot of ways. So hopefully it's really rewarding for everybody, no matter how recently they've read the comic.
And I have no friends in the area who have ever read the comics. I don't have too many friends in the area who are actually watching the show. So I just watch an episode and look forward to the next one, and even while I'm recording I'm like giving all these names a quick look up because I can't remember them for the life of me, and just to show how genuine it is, because there are a lot of people out there who don't care about the source material because they just enjoy watching TV. They're not comic people, they're not readers, and yeah, this show is for everybody who fits any of those categories, because we just want you to be able to enjoy good entertainment.
I was just gonna say, I've heard Robert Kirkman say that the show's going to be its own thing and it's not going to be 100% faithful to the comics. And I really like that approach. It's kind of the Douglas Adams Hitchhiker approach.
Oh, sure.
Where the radio play wasn't meant to be the same as the book.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the movies later weren't meant to be the same as the radio play. Each was its own thing, and if you enjoyed one, you'd probably enjoy the other, but there's going to be different twists and turns.
Mm-hmm. Certainly.
And like, I think that is a great way to adapt. In a way, that's the way the MCU is adapting.
Mm-hmm. Oh, certainly. Yeah. Yeah, it's a great comparison.
Civil War was one of the big examples for that, because in the comics it was like 50-60 people all fighting each other, where in the movie there was like hardly 10. And there was a lot of diehard fans who were like, it's not the same, it didn't hit the source material. And I'm like, but it was good. Can you not acknowledge that it was a good movie with a good scene and a great story that people who don't read comics enjoy? Like, enjoy it for what it is and what the creators made out of it, not what it's based off of. If it pays homage to certain scenes from the comics, give it a clap. Enjoy the entertainment that you have at your hands and don't give people shit for not knowing what you know.
Yeah, the only one I maybe ever had a minor gripe about was Age of Ultron. Because Age of Ultron was not the greatest comic series, and it wasn't the greatest Marvel movie either, in retrospect, although I liked it a lot when it first came out. I don't think it's aged as well as other movies, you know, like Winter Soldier. But the main thing is, the title just didn't fit what happened in that movie. Like, you know, the MCU cast guys joke about Weekend at Ultron's. Right.
Yep. I do love that joke. And I was actually just going to, I was getting ready to say, until next time, True Believers. Wait, wrong podcast. But, well, with that in mind, we are a part of the Stranded Panda Network, of which the MCU podcast, led by the great Matt Carroll and the talented Jeff Randall. That is the flagship show for this network, and we are a part of that. So please check out all the great things that are going on at strandedpanda.com. There are several geeky fandom-related podcasts there. And then we've also got the YouTube channel. I believe that's just youtube.com/strandedpanda. And then we've also got a Twitch channel where a lot of fun things happen, like the live MCU podcast and then the trivia that we do on Wednesday nights, and that is Stranded Panda, twitch.tv/strandedpandatv, excuse me. And I think that's going to do it for me. If you guys would like to follow me on Twitter or check out any of the artwork that I do on Instagram, you can follow me at jscottyforreal. And that's it for me. You guys have anything you'd like to say?
Nope, just looking forward to the next two episodes.
Right on.
Stay whelmed.